Jay from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerd, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Darren!
John!
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How was your Thanksgiving, man?
It was all right. Low key. You
know, low key.
Didn't do much. How was yours?
Oh, it's good. Spent it with some family. Ate some turkey and some lasagna there, and ham, and vegetables. Some cookies. I had some cookies.
Okay.
Had some pot roast.
Uh-huh.
Had some yams.
All right.
Some pie.
Okay.
Apple, blueberry, and sweet potato.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's a lot of pies.
Had some drinks.
Okay.
Had some wine.
That's good, yeah.
Potatoes.
Potatoes, yeah.
All right. Mac and cheese.
Wow, okay.
And, yeah, that's it. And a salad, too, because I'm trying to
trying
to watch my weight.
Yeah, yeah. You want to keep that girlish figure.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know. That diet starts Monday. But yeah. So and that was it. Nothing too crazy.
Right.
Just the norm.
So yeah, very very restrained.
Yes.
Thanksgiving didn't eat a whole lot.
No. Oh, and collard greens. I had them collard greens.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because you know health kick.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
You need some roughage. But yeah, that's it. Nothing too crazy to report.
Okay.
Cool. Stayed away from Black Friday, of course. I never was one of those people that got into that, really.
Oh, going out to the stores. And
yeah,
all that.
And like, you know, fighting mobs of people to get like $2 off a toaster oven or something. Like, why?
Don't
do that, people.
I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
Like, one of my local comic shops was having a sale, Dewey's Comic City over in Madison. I went over there.
Hey.
Got some stuff.
Nice.
And
support small businesses.
But that was for me.
Yeah, that's for you.
That was for me.
You didn't have to push anybody out the way or knock over a...
I didn't have to. I did anyway, but...
you just did that for your own...
I just did that for my own sick pleasure.
This is for me.
I just walked in. I was like, get out of my way, you! Slammed him. And, yeah.
You gotta show him who's boss.
That's right. That's
right.
You know, right. I tossed him out of the store. They yelled out a Wilhelm scream and...
Yahoo-hoo-hoo-wee!
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, you gotta be the bully of the comic book shop.
Exactly. It's the one place where I can feel superior to somebody.
Yeah, you walk into the place, Bad to the Bone starts playing.
Exactly.
The day I was born.
And speaking of badass motherfuckers.
Whoa, look at that. Did you just segue like
that? I know. This is not my first segue.
Woo.
We are covering this week. We're preparing for Eddie Murphy's upcoming hosting.
Right.
On Saturday Night Live.
Right. Today was an off week, so we went
We said we should do an Eddie Murphy movie. What should we do? We've done Trading Places. Should we do Beverly Hills Cop? Should we do 48 Hours?
Right.
But you suggested let's do
something more newer.
Yeah.
More modern.
Something current.
Yeah.
Something that is only a month old.
Still in the zeitgeist.
We are doing Dolomite Is My Name.
Pow!
Which is from 2019. It had a limited theatrical release.
In October 4th.
Yeah, October 4th. But it is on Netflix. It is on Netflix currently as we are recording this. I just finished watching it an hour ago.
Right.
So
fresh takes abound.
Fresh in my mind.
Yeah, so yeah, Dolomite Is My Name, a movie written by Scott Alexander and Larry Krasuski. And they're no strangers to the biopic game because they've also written... People versus Larry Flint, Ed Wood, which you mentioned, and a movie we may need to think about talking about in the future, the Andy Kaufman film, Man on the Moon.
Yeah, that hits on Saturday Night Live. That would be a good one for us to cover at some point.
Yeah, they actually do recreate that whole, that Mighty Mouse, you know, legendary.
From the very first episode.
Yeah, and like, I was watching a clip of that like online, and I saw Lorne was in it. He was like playing like a younger version of himself.
Yeah, and
it's like, Lorne's never in movies. What's this?
Well, and it's interesting because... like Lorne is there when they vote Andy Kaufman off the show, but Lorne wasn't on SNL then. He wasn't involved with the show, so in a weird way he's like taking responsibility for something he did not do.
Lorne.
But let's not go on a whole Man in the Moon tangent.
Yeah, we'll save that for later. Oh, and also the film was directed by Craig Brewer, who did Hustle and Flow, Black Snake Moan, and he's directing now the upcoming Coming to America sequel.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I don't think I've seen any of Craig Brewer's films before, but definitely a fan of Scott Alexander and Larry Kazowski.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know. I'm taking my best guess.
Okay.
I haven't heard his name spoken aloud much, but I'm a fan of it. They also did Big Eyes, the film about Margaret Keane that Tim Burton directed.
Oh, that's right.
And they were also involved with the series American Crime Story. They did the the first season that was about the O.J. Simpson trial.
Oh, okay.
I got sucked into that when that came out a few years ago.
Really?
And I was not somebody who like followed the O.J. trial real closely or anything, but that was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was like in high school or maybe junior. I forget when. But like, yeah, I still remember like the O.J. trial was a big, big thing.
It was, deal. And people were like really caught up in it, and I didn't really get into that. But I mean, it was omnipresent at the time, but the TV series was so great.
Yeah, like I remember people were telling me like, oh, you're like they would bring in the TV into like people's in your classroom, like when the car chase was happening. I kind of remember that, like, or not the car chase, but like when the verdict happened. Yeah. I remember like, you know, our teacher would be like, all right, students, let's, you know, let's watch this verdict, and like bringing the TV in. Like I remember that people were watching at work, and it was like, I'm like, my God, like the whole country was just
I didn't watch the verdict live. What, how did people react when they watched the verdict live?
It depends on who you were. Uh-huh. Like, some people were elated, some people not so happy.
Okay.
And let's leave it at that.
All right. So, divided classroom.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Did you have like a class debate after that?
Or? I don't remember if we did. We might have. But I mean, I don't know if there was any like, you know, you will not replace as people in my classroom back then. But like, I there might have been people who were maybe a little upset and grew up to vote for our president now. So
yeah,
it all comes full circle.
But but let's get into like talking about Dolomite Is My Name.
This is about
like a famous blaxploitation film, Dolomite.
Right. And a character, Rudy Ray Moore, playing by Dolomite. Actually, did you before this movie? Before you saw this movie, did you know anything about Rudy Ray Moore or Dolomite?
I had heard of Dolomite. I've never seen Dolomite, and I don't think I'd really heard of Rudy Ray Moore before. So I just knew the name Dolomite, and I knew it was like a famous blaxploitation film, and that was probably about the extent of my knowledge.
Okay. See, I knew about Rudy Ray Moore just through hip-hop. Because, like, you know, I'm a big hip-hop head, as some of you may know.
Yeah.
And, like, if you listen to, like, a lot of hip-hop, from like especially from the 90s, he gets, like, shouted out in a lot of hip, like, his stuff gets sampled, or he himself was on, like, a lot of hip-hop records. Like, he was on Big Daddy Kane stuff, he was on Busta Rhymes, Snoop Dogg totally shouted him out, Two Live Crew, he was on an episode of Martin.
Because he did a lot of this rhyming stuff, and he's called, like, the godfather of rap, I understand.
Yeah, like, the way his kind of rhymes and flows were, you know, the way his act, it was a lot of, like, people younger kind of looked up to him and kind of took that and just kind of did it to a beat, and it kind of, yeah, he definitely influenced the way, like, a lot of people rap and stuff. Mm-hmm. You can even hear it on the song Nothing But a G Thing, the Dr. Dre Snoop Dogg song, like Snoop shouts him out in the lyric. Hold on, let me see if I can find it.
Okay.
Here it goes. Showing much flex when it's time to wreck a mic, pimping hose and clocking a grip like my name was Dolomite.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And like pretty much the first thing you see in this movie is Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
And I was like, and my first note was like, oh, unexpected Snoop Dogg. I had no idea he was going to be in this movie.
Unexpected Snoop Dogg.
And he's playing a DJ who's working in the back of a record shop.
Right.
And Eddie Murphy is Rudy Ray Moore, who's an assistant manager at this record shop.
Right.
And he's trying to get the records he's really into playing on Snoop's show. But Snoop is like, no, I just play the hits.
Yeah, and that shows you where you are at your life, where you're the assistant manager in a record store, and the DJ who works for the record store won't play your shit.
Yeah.
That's
and he was like, "Look, do you think this is what I want to do? We did not make good choices in our lives. We had our shots, and we didn't make it." And I was like, "Oh wow, that's
shit gets real."
Yeah.
But there's some truth to that, because like in the start of the movie, Rudy Ray Moore, he's in his I believe he's like in his late 40s when he at this point, and he was trying to be like a all around entertainer, like singer, comedian, like a Sammy Davis Jr. type,
right?
And just none of it panned out. So now he's just like flat broke, working in a record store, and he's just like very despondent. And he also has a side job; he MCs at a club. You know, opening up for his friend's band, Ben Taylor, played by Craig Robinson.
Craig Robinson, who I enjoy. I find Craig Robinson entertaining.
Craig Robinson's good stuff.
You know Craig Robinson from The Office and from Hot Tub Time Machine. What else? He pops up in all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, he does a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy seeing Craig Robinson pop up. Oh, before we get too deep into this, we should mention or I want to mention, the movie is rated R for pervasive language, crude sexual content, and graphic nudity. I see this like at the top of my screen as I queue it up on Netflix, and I was like, oh, well, we're in for a ride.
Yeah, put the kids to bed.
So this is interesting. So we learn like where Rudy Ray Moore is in his life, and he's emceeing the show, and he's doing his jokes, and he does okay. He doesn't.
Yeah, no one really. Great. No one cares.
He's not really exciting anyone.
Yeah, people are like talking over him, which as a comedian, kind of. Yeah, that hits too close to home for me.
I was so amused by the manager of the club lighting him with a flashlight.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, before cell phones.
Now, you know what they do in stand-up comedy, in case you don't know, is when you're getting towards the end of your allotted time, they give you the light. And what they do now is they will hold up their cell phone in the back of the club. You see the light shining from the cell phone in the dark of the room, and then you're like, oh gee, okay, I better wrap it up. And you can tell the people like, oh, just light me at a minute, light me at two minutes, or you know, whatever you want it to be, and then you will wrap it up. And it's considered a faux pas to go over your time.
You don't want to run the light or blow the light.
Right.
That's a no-no.
Yeah, because then you're taking time away from the other comedians, and you're showing that you don't really care about the other people on the show.
We know a few people have done that, but we're not going to name names.
I know people who have blatantly done that. We'll talk off air. We'll sling the dirt then.
Dish.
Rudy, like, he runs his time over his time a little bit, and he's getting some grief over that.
Yeah, and he's just at this point in his life where it's like he's not doing what he wants. He's not making the money. He's very despondent at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I think at one point, like, he hangs out with his friends after the show.
Uh-huh.
His friend Tony, who works with him at the record store, played by Titus Burgess from Kimmy Schmidt. And comedian Mike Epps, who plays Jimmy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has this really good Mike monologue where it's like, how did I get to this point in my life? Like, you know, this job at the record store was supposed to be like my only, like my part-time thing.
This was supposed to be my day job.
Yeah, and now it's the only
thing.
And now
it's become my main source of income, and it's just like, oh, God, this speaks to me.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough out here in these streets.
Yeah.
He's very despondent. And then one day, he's working in the record store, and the local wino, the local drunk, Rico, comes in, and he kind of drunkenly tells these stories about this character Dolomite, who he's basically like a kind of folklore or urban myth, like, you know, and it's like these kind of street jokes. Poetry he's trying to tell to all these people.
And it's this old guy with no teeth.
Yes, played by Ron Cephas Jones, who's on This Is Us.
Oh.
And and he tells all these people about, you know, all, you know, Dolomite is a bad motherfucker, you know, and like, he tells all these kind of, you know, spins these yarns, and of course, Rudy just trying to get him out of the store because he smells like pee and he just wants money.
Right.
So, but like, he notices that the people kind of, you know, enjoying these stories they hear.
People are responding to the stories.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because apparently these stories, like, people have kind of heard before in their childhood. I guess these are like old street jokes. So then Rudy kind of gets the idea, well, maybe, what would you think if I just, he just thinks like, oh, maybe I should just take these jokes and maybe create a character around them and make some joke around them. You know, maybe I could be the Dolomite character he talks about.
So he tracks down Rico, and he finds him on the street. And he brings like a big tape recorder. It's the 70s, so he's got like this big tape recorder. And he's like, you know, I got some hooch. I got some money.
That's right.
I want you guys to tell me all your stories.
That's all I need to be bought.
And he records these guys just telling their stories. And then we cut to Ray back in his apartment. He's writing all this stuff down.
Right. And he's punching it up. And
he's crafting jokes out of it. He's crafting materials, and he's doing the rhyming thing.
Yeah, yeah. And
I didn't write down any examples of the rhyming. Did you get any of that or no?
Shoot, I wish I did. But
okay.
No, I didn't.
No, it's fine.
It's rhyming stuff. You know, rhymes, people.
Yeah, it's they say a word and then they say another word that sounds kind of like that word, but it's a little different in the beginning. But at the end, they're the same. So we call that rhyming.
Rhymes.
Yes.
Yeah, but in this case, it's a lot of filthy, you know, rhymes with phallics involved in private parts.
Yes.
So yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most Caucasian explanation.
My mom could be listening, man.
Yeah.
Crying out loud. Well, good boy. All right, so yeah, so then he creates this character, Dolomite. He gets like this old Afro wig he has out of storage, and he kind of puts that on, and he has his old tuxedos from his days as a background singer.
He's got these big ostentatious suits, a couple of
those I was like,
you want to get a new look.
Not too shabby, all right. Yeah.
And he goes back to the club, and he's like, hey, I'm going to try some new stuff. And the manager of the club's like, no, you look like a pimp. Just do your old stuff. Do your usual stuff. Do the stuff that works. This show isn't about you. You're just emceeing.
Right.
You're just introing the acts.
Right. And then he doesn't do that, and he goes into the thing. He's like, way down in the jungle deep.
Uh-huh.
And then he tells this kind of perverse story about, like, I don't know, like a monkey, like an elephant stepping on a monkey's foot or something. And it gets really kind of weird, but it's also very engaging. The people get really into it.
It's like an instant hit. He's killing with the audience. The audience is laughing.
Right. It's just like over the top, perverse kind of sexual stories, and people are like really into it.
And the first time he tells a punchline, the drummer at the club, he does the usual thing where he gives him the rim shot. And then he, like, Rudy immediately turns and he's like, don't give me that Buddy Hackett shit. You know, give me a beat. And like, he gets on the bongos and
taking shots to Buddy Hackett.
Yeah,
wow.
I know.
But yeah, no, and it starts to, he notices, oh, this is something. This could be something. So then after that, the next thing he wants to do is like, oh, maybe I should record this and put an album out.
Right.
So then he goes to his auntie, played by Lunel, famous comedian, borrows some money from her after she got some money in some settlement after like falling off a bus, she said, or getting hit by a bus.
Right, as you do.
Yeah, something bus related.
Right.
So he got the money from her, and he recorded this party album in somebody's apartment, which is pretty ingenious. I that's the thing I kind of appreciate about Rudy Ray Moore, his kind of ingenuity.
Yeah.
Trying to like,
He was a do-it-yourselfer.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, as comedians, you know, both of us, we can, you know, we kind of relate to that.
Well, he made his own niche, you know? He found his spot, and that's amazing, and that's wonderful to see that happen.
Yeah. So, he invited a bunch of people over, he did a show, you know, he got everybody drunk, and they recorded it, and he tried to sell it, and lo and behold, nobody would put it out because it's incredibly filthy.
Right, and this is like the early 70s, and it's still, controversial. They're like, you can't play this on the radio. You can't. I mean, there are like blue state laws,
right?
Or, you know, whatever. And so he's starts selling it on the down low at his record shop.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he just he went to a few people, they wouldn't put it out, and then they were like, all right, fuck it, I'll just put it out myself. And then he, you know, just like you said, like, he starts selling it in his record shop. He starts selling it out of the back of cars,
the trunk of his car,
He does it
at shows.
At shows, and he does this thing where he has like the stamp of a devil on it.
Yeah,
and they ask, oh, what's the stamp of a devil on it? And Rudy says, oh, this is. It makes it look like it's naughty. It's like nothing you're supposed to
forbidden.
Have.
Forbidden. Yeah. Exactly. It's a brown paper wrapper and then just that devil stamp on top. And that's how he sells it. There's no cover to the album yet.
Right. But, it's like basically like before the parental advisory stickers come
on. Right.
And I mean, that does work. People see that devil. It's like, oh, this is the raw shit.
Yeah. Everyone wants to feel like they're in on something new and dangerous. And
that is very true.
Yeah.
So, sure enough, like, he sells a good amount of the albums, and there's a buzz out there over these albums. And I believe after that he was
he's like approached by a record company.
Yes, he was approached by a record company, and because like one of them finds out, oh, this stuff's playing all over. We should get in on this. And
this could blow up. This could be a thing.
Right. Exactly.
It's like the people at the label. Their job is to spot the next trend, and they're like, this could be something. This comedy thing, this could take off.
Yeah, so of course Rudy signs with them, and he puts out his album Eat Out More Often.
Yeah, and they show them shooting the cover for it, and the cover, how do we describe the cover?
It's
he's got a lady on a couch.
Yeah, she's
got a bowl of fruit.
Yeah.
And she's, Rudy Ray Moore is behind her.
The lady is not clothed.
She is not clothed. She's got like a blanket over her. Or they put, I think it might they be put, all. Yeah, I can't remember.
My eyes were covered. I was like, oh, this
right. is... Right, yeah, I was fanning myself. And, yeah, I got my smelling salts.
I fainted. I was like, yeah.
Anyway, it's a young lady in a state of undress. Mm. And and she's holding the bowl of fruit like on her lap.
As you do.
As you do. And Rudy Ray Moore is behind the couch, and he's... Yeah,
he's they, buck-ass naked
and
too.
They've got like labels over the naughty bits and
right.
and stuff. But it looks very controversial and looks very
raw. Like
it's edgy.
It's like a Two Live Crew album.
Yeah, exactly.
So so based on that, and then that album sells pretty well too. And then they figure, oh, maybe I should go on tour. So then Rudy starts playing the Chitlin' circuit. Like he just gets a car, drives to like Mississippi and Georgia, and he does all these shows. Oh, everywhere, like, and you know, tells his stories, and you know, he tells like kind of like snaps, and because I did write one that I thought was funny. He's like, "Oh, dude, so dumb. He turned on a blowjob because he thought it would mess around with his unemployment check or something like that." Y'all ready for this? And and he starts to gain an audience. Like he starts to grow an audience. And then on one of his shows, he meets this woman, Lady Reed, played by Divine Joyce Randolph.
Uh-huh.
He meets her out on the road, and she's like a fuller-sized woman, we'll say.
And he sees her, and she's like getting into a fight with a guy.
Yeah, yeah, her at the show. Husband or boyfriend, because the husband or boyfriend, he's with another woman.
Right.
And she's like, what is this?
And they're I forget who hit one first, but I think he hit her and then she hits him back.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's wailing on him.
Yeah. And Rudy sees all this goes down. He's like, oh, yeah. Goddamn.
And he's like, oh, well, this is something here.
Yeah, yeah. And so then after the show, he strikes up this conversation with Lady Reed. And, you know, she's very despondent. It's like, yeah, you know, we got a kid and he's out here sleeping with all these these trollops.
These young skanks.
Yeah,
he's stepping out on her.
Yeah, he's a skank. That's just rude.
He doesn't recognize the good loving he's getting at home.
That is true. So. But yeah, so then he's, you know, like Lady Reed and Rudy start talking, and sure enough, Rudy's like, well, why don't you do some shows with me? You seem to, you got some spark in you.
Yeah.
So, and sure enough, like, she kind of sings and tells jokes with him and she goes on tour with him.
She creates her own character. Like, she doesn't realize that the extent that Dolemite is a character. Because Rudy's got the fake afro.
Right, right.
And he's like, no, pull on my hair. And she realizes it's a wig. And he kind of convinces her, no, you don't have to be 100% yourself on stage. You can be this character. You can be like me and recreate yourself into like this larger than life character.
Yeah, I mean it still happens today. I mean like Larry the Cable Guy and like Andrew Dice Clay, like but I mean Rudy was doing that before all of those guys.
Yeah,
which is interesting. So yeah, so she goes under the name Queen Bee, I believe, right?
And that sounds right.
Yeah, yeah, and then they go on tour and she kind of becomes his protege.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like things are really starting to take off for Rudy.
Yeah, and we have like sort of this. You run into this thing in biopics a lot where it's like you see them succeed and we have to like compress the event so it seems like it's like really really easy to succeed.
Like all this took a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Like I mean they have to compress this stuff so it seems like oh we try this one thing and then it's you know skyrocket to the stars
straight to the moon. Alice.
Like a little later we see like some more of the struggle, but but early on it seems like it's like oh you know once you have that idea it's just. That's right. It.
It's very true. And then also, as it turns out, his album makes the charts. It gets on the charts.
It gets on the Billboard chart.
Yeah.
Like, it's on there with a bullet, which means it's, like, rising very fast. And
Right. So it's like, oh, wow. So things are starting to happen. So things are looking up for
And then they were like, you got to get back here and record some more albums.
Right.
And then they have a montage of his other albums, and they showed at least four or five other albums. I don't know how many albums he did altogether. Do you know how many?
Not off the top of my head.
I didn't put up a Wikipedia entry of Rudy Ray Moore. Give me a minute. I'll get him up on the screen.
Okay. I know that the other album titles were also pretty full of double entendre and pretty funny too.
All right, we got Dolemite Records and Wider Acclaim discography. Oh my goodness, look at all this!
How many albums did he put out?
I don't. okay, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It looks like 7 albums, and then I'm assuming a lot of them are repackaging.
Oh wow,
his stuff.
Dude's like Tom Waits
but
over here.
Yeah, his first album was Below the Belt in 1959 and 62.
Oh, that might be a song because like, okay. He was a singer. Before.
All right. Okay, Eat Out More Often was 1970.
Okay.
Then apparently later, 1970, there was This Pussy Belongs to Me.
Ooh.
and we had, and 72, we had Dolomite for President.
Okay.
We don't have years for the other albums on the Wikipedia entry, but yeah. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a.
So he did quite well for himself.
He did all right, but I mean, it's all kind of underground too, because like I don't think the mainstream people know about him, but like his.
You mean the white people.
Ah,
well, no, because yes. I mean, yeah, he becomes like this thing in black culture, and
yeah, exactly. So, so he's riding high now. So him and he gets his friends together, Jimmy and Ben and Tony from the shop, and he's like, I feel good today. Let's go watch a movie. Let's go watch a comedy. And then they say like, oh, let's go see Blackula or something like that.
Like it was a black vampire thing or something like that, and he's like, no, I want to laugh. I want to see a comedy. Let's go see The Front Page. And they see the remake of The Front Page that Jack Lemmon did with Walter Matthau. And this was in the 70s.
Yeah, Billy Wilder movie.
And it was Billy Wilder, yeah, who directed it.
When he said The Front Page, I was like, what? I haven't even seen that movie, but I was like.
I know it's not regarded as the classic that the original version of the. Well, they've remade The Front Page a few times.
Oh, did they?
I know one of the remakes was His Girl Friday, which is like a comedy classic.
Oh, okay.
But The Front Page, I believe it was a play, and it was originally two guys. And for His Girl Friday, they made one of the male parts into a woman, and they made it into a romance.
Huh.
Like sort of it was the romantic comedy of its day. But the Jack Lemmon Walter Matthau version, they went back to the original.
Okay.
Version, and it was two guys, and I don't think that movie did too well.
Okay.
But we see them in the theaters, and it's a theater full of people laughing. Yeah. You know, it's a mostly white audience,
and they're like, what?
And Rudy and his friends, they just don't. It doesn't speak to them at all. They don't get it. It's not their thing, and they're like, why is everybody laughing? What the hell? And then they walk out of the movie, and he's like, what kind of movie was that? There's no titties, there's no funny, and there's no kung fu.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. There probably was not any titties or kung fu in The Front Page with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau.
They missed a golden opportunity there.
I find I've seen a few Walter Matthau Jack Lemmon movies, and I find that they are rather low on the titties and the kung fu.
I mean, I guess that's just part of the time. I don't know. It was just
there is some nudity in Buddy Buddy. I remember seeing the movie Buddy Buddy as a kid,
but no kung fu.
I don't remember them ever doing any kung fu.
Yes, you need. That. I would. It's a magical formula.
They didn't have any kung fu in Grumpy Old Men, did they?
I'd have to go back and watch.
They should have had kung fu.
In Grumpy Old Man.
Just a big kung fu fight with Burgess Meredith and Anne Margaret and Sophia Loren.
Now you're cooking.
Come on.
I mean, God. Now you're cooking. Oh, Burgess Meredith giving the old hi-ya?
Yeah.
Whew.
I mean, that's the dream.
And the Oscar goes
and
too.
He had fighting experience from the Batman show.
Yeah.
He could, you know, throw a punch and then a sound effect appears in the air in front of him.
Pow.
Yeah.
Bop. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me you wouldn't watch that movie.
I would. I'd buy the Blu-ray right now.
I'm just saying that Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon should have done more kung fu in their movies.
Missed opportunity.
It's just sad that they're no longer with us and we will never see that happen.
Breaks my heart.
But, someday we'll do a biopic of Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon and we'll put in the kung fu fights.
Kung fu masters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
You have my money.
Just a straight remake of Enter the Dragon, only with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
This could sell. We shouldn't even be saying this in microphones.
We shouldn't. Like, this is a million-dollar idea right here.
Somebody's going to take it.
Yeah.
And then we'll be out on the street with no money. Wait.
Pretty much where we are now.
Oh.
Yeah.
You didn't have to remind me of that.
But anyway, so Rudy decides, he decides, I'm going to make a movie. I'm going to make a movie that we want to see. Titties and kung fu and funny and so he goes and gets a writer. He hooks up with this writer, Jerry Jones, played by Keegan-Michael Key.
Right.
From Key and Peele and Mad TV and
Right, right. And well, I mean, actually, I think before that, he was trying to pitch the idea to a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, no one really wanted to.
They don't go for it.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, I mean, because he has, like, a following. He has an audience. And the first person he goes to was Walter Crane, who played by T.I., the rapper T.I.
Oh, right, right, right.
And he's saying, yeah, you know, I want to have this movie from the streets for people, you know, like, what do you? And they're like, no, we don't do that. We get, you know, we're trying to do uplifting black movies. Like, we have this movie coming out called Cornbread Earl and Me. What do you think of that? And then Rudy just looks him in the eye and says, hey, man, don't nobody want to see that shit. I don't know why that made me laugh.
Nobody wants to see that shit.
Yeah, so then he figures, all right, well, if the people don't want it, then maybe I'll just do it myself. And, you know, so then he, like I said, like he finances the movie by himself.
Right.
He asks the people at his record label for, like, an advance. So it's like one of those things where they kind of, he wants an advance on his record, so like they kind of own more of the
right. They own a bigger piece of like the royalties and all that.
Exactly. And so then he goes, finds Jerry Jones, played by Keegan-Michael Key, like you said.
Yeah.
And he's like a playwright who likes to write films and plays about the black struggle. And
very important. He wants like the important content in there. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, they bond over the fact that they're both from Arkansas, and he convinced to write.
Was it Arkansas? I was thinking it was Alabama.
No, no.
Okay, Arkansas. Because
he said he was, like, from Vernon, Rudy's from, like, Fort Smith.
Okay, Arkansas. So I got that wrong.
Yeah. All right. So then they start writing. So he starts writing the screenplay with Jerry and talks about how he should have pimps and whores and kung fu.
Right.
And
then he's like, we should have an exorcism in there, because I guess the exorcist had just come out or something. And
right, right.
And he's like, where are we going to put in an exorcist? And he's like, no, we'll put that in a later film. And apparently they did do a later film.
Yeah, that's a reference to another movie he came out with called Petey Wheatstraw, The Devil's Son-in-Law. It's an insane premise. It's like he plays like a dude who gets killed and two times by his friends, and he goes to hell. And then the devil, he makes a deal with the devil to send him back to heaven to kill all the people who killed him as part of revenge.
And you've seen this movie?
I've read about it.
Oh, okay,
and then the devil says, "All right, I'll let you go back up and extract your revenge, but in return, you have to marry my daughter-in-law and her daughter-in-law is very. Or you have to marry my daughter, and the daughter of the devil is very." Ugly and heinous.
Oh,
so he kind of
didn't see that coming.
Yeah, so he kind of breaks his deal with the devil while he's up there, and he goes back to Earth to kill all the people that killed him.
Sure, okay. All right.
Solid premise.
All right. And it's probably got titties and kung fu.
Titties and kung fu, of
titties
course.
And kung
I mean,
fu.
That's a Rudy Ray Moore stamp of, that's a staple.
How many of his movies have you seen?
I haven't seen any of them, really. I just read about him and like kind of watched them, like watch clips here and there.
I thought you'd seen the original Dolomite.
No, I saw parts of it. That one scene where they recreate the scene where he's like doing like the horrible bad kung fu kicking.
Right.
Just as bad.
And this is skipping ahead a little bit, but they start doing the movie and they're like, Rudy, do you know kung fu? And he's like, no, but I can pick it up. I'm a fast learner.
Yeah. Hoo ha he yeah.
And it's basically on the level of like the kung fu that Eddie Murphy pretends he knows how to do in the jail and Trading Places.
So just imagine a man in his late 40s pretending to do karate.
Being played by a man in his late 50s.
Yes, exactly.
pretending to do karate.
Very much. It's very like Steven Seagal-y.
Right.
It's like those type of moves.
And they also had to find a... Well, let's see. They go to a strip club.
Yeah, and the director just happens to be there.
Right.
The
he's like they go to a strip club and he's like talking to the strippers and he's like, "Hey, do you want to be in my movie?" And the strippers are like, "No, I'm not doing any porn.
I ain't gonna be in no porno."
So it's not going well.
Yeah.
And then they spot
Derville Martin.
Derville Martin, played by Wesley Snipes.
Right.
Who's in the club, and they know him from his other work.
Yeah, he was in Black Caesar, Hell Up in Harlem, and he had the small part in Rosemary's Baby.
Yes. Because he talks about, I worked with Roman Polanski. And
yeah, but he was like the elevator operator.
Which back in the 70s, that was considered a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, not so much.
It's like,
we didn't know quite as much about Mr. Roman Polanski.
Yeah, it's like bragging you were in a Harvey Weinstein film back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, back then, that was a good thing, and now...
Look, Oh, yes. Thank you. How did we not ring that until now?
I don't know.
A little problematic bell. We got all caught up talking about the titties in Kung Fu.
I know, as you do.
As you do.
Yeah.
As you do.
But I really love the way Snipes played this character. He was kind of all over the place. It was a little over the top. It reminded me a lot of his character in Tu Wong Fu, like Noxzema.
Okay. I haven't seen Tu Wong Fu.
You haven't seen Tu Wong Fu?
I need to see Tu Wong Fu,
what?
I guess. Yeah,
it's good stuff. Okay. But yeah, like the way he plays Derville is like very kind of over the top but hilariously. Uh-huh. So, and he asks him if he wants to be in. And then Rudy asks Derville, "Do you want to be in our movie? You know, you have some clout. You can give our movie some clout.
Yeah, some cachet.
Yeah,
that's the
cachet.
Yeah,
and of course, Derville's like, you know, I have an agent. I'm not doing that."
Yeah.
You know, but he also is like drinking heavily and stuff. And then Rudy's like, well, what if we let you direct it?
Yeah, you can direct it and co-star in it. And
Derville's like, you got yourself a deal.
Sold.
That's right. So yeah, so then he goes to his record label to ask for money. And he gets an advance on his royalties, but his label owns more of his album, which you talked about.
Right.
And so then what happens? They start filming. They find an old abandoned hotel,
right,
and then just break in and then just start. It's like, oh yeah, this will be
they are squatters basically.
Yes, very much so. Like, I don't think they got like any paperwork done with the city in order to shoot.
No
permits, no,
but it's I mean, this is where the movie really started to remind me of Ed Wood, which was another movie written by the same screenwriters,
right?
Where it's just a group of friends, they're making a movie. They don't really know much about the movie business. They don't really know how to go about this, but they just have this blind enthusiasm for it.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're doing, but
just full of a lot of heart and pluck.
Yeah, you know, and it's an interesting thing of how I'll just call him Larry and Scott because the last name is very tough to pronounce. But Larry and Scott, they decided to do the Ed Wood movie because. They were the screenwriters of the Problem Child movies.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which were these movies about like these kids' comedy things from the early 90s.
Yeah, Jack Tripper was in it.
Yeah,
Ritter.
John Ritter.
I show respect. Yeah. John Ritter.
John Ritter was in it, and he like adopted this horrible kid who was a problem child.
Yeah.
And these were horribly reviewed movies, I think. Well, the first one must have done well enough because they did a sequel.
I think the first one did. I remember seeing the first one in the theater. I think it was pretty funny.
But
it didn't take much to amuse me back then.
But it was just savaged by critics. People were like, this is the worst movie ever made and all this. And so these guys decided, well, let's lean into this. Let's make a movie about the world's worst filmmaker. The guy who, because Ed Wood's film, Plan 9 from Outer Space, was voted the worst movie of all time. So they said, let's make a biography of this movie, and their take on him was like, well, he's at least trying.
Yeah,
he is trying. Doesn't that count for something?
Yeah, like he doesn't have the talent, but he has the heart.
Right.
Doesn't that count for anything?
Right. And
you monsters.
And there were like some scenes in this movie that kind of reminded me of that, where like you see Rudy, he's on the phone with the movie distributors. This is later on in the movie, but you know, he's trying to get distributors to pick up and release his movie.
Right.
And they're saying, like, no, we're not interested. And it reminded me of that scene where Ed Wood's in the phone booth and he's like, worst movie you ever saw. Well, my next movie will be better. And, you know,
there
it's
you
just,
go.
He does not, like, they just both continue on even in the face of all these signs that they should not.
Yeah, they carry on.
And there's something admirable in that.
There is. There's, you know, just having just blind faith that you will. Your stuff will get better, and you'll go on,
and
it's a beautiful thing.
And you continue on,
even, blind enthusiasm,
even though you don't know better. Maybe even because you don't know better,
right?
Because like, if you knew more, you would know how impossible it is.
Yeah, if you knew how bad you were, you'd be way more depressed.
Right, exactly.
But you don't,
exactly.
And there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's there's your silver lining.
So there's something endearing. So that was kind of the start of how these screeners, they decided like, oh, well, let's this be a thing we do. We tell these biographical stories of these odd people who are kind of on the fringe. And so they did Ed Wood, they did Larry Flint, they did
Andy Kaufman.
And that's become part of their brand. And I find that amazing.
Oh,
that's so
yeah.
cool. That they took like these not well-regarded flop movies and they made it into their thing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going back to the movie. So so then they break into a hotel to shoot. They get a film crew from UCLA, like a bunch of film students that Jerry knows.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just like, the people ask, all right, so, like, you know, what are we doing here? Like, what are we filming on? What was our type of film we're using? And then Rudy's like, whoa, 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 we don't know anything about all that.
I don't know all that technical stuff. He's like, I don't know any of that stuff. You're going to have to handle all that.
Yeah, like film. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Whoa, whoa. Slow down, Einstein.
Technicolor. And of course, they're, you know, I mean, you know, college students would probably do something like this just to do it.
Just for the experience.
Yeah. They look around and say, hey, there's no electricity in this building.
And they're like, oh, well, we'll just climb up that pole and steal it from the building next door.
I wish I looked that up to see if that was actually true. Like,
I didn't see anything about that on the IMDb trivia or anything.
It probably was, but still, that's like...
I don't know. Even if it's not true, it should be true.
Even if I was in college and somebody told me, oh, yeah, just go over there and steal it from across the street, I would have been like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do this job. I should probably go.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, they kept at it. And also because Rudy's putting all his money into this film, he can't afford his rent in his apartment. So now he's sleeping in the rundown hotel.
Right. He's just like, make up the bedroom nice. I'm going to sleep there.
I was like, yikes. I don't know what.
It is something. But there are some funny moments when they're making the movie. I liked when they were instructing the director of photography, the DP. You know, they were like, you have to be careful. Because it's a young white kid.
Yeah,
who's
yeah.
doing this. And they're like, you have to shoot the people in this movie differently, the cast differently. Right. He says, because black people absorb light, white people reflect light.
Right, right. That's and what Derville said.
Yeah, Derville says that. He's instructing.
And that's something that Rudy did not even think about.
Yeah, and they had a thing where like an older white actor who's playing a character in the movie, he's...
Oh, yeah, that was funny, too.
He's talking to... Was it Queen Bee he was talking
to?
Yes,
yes.
And he's like... Oh, well, I have lots of acting experience. I played a plantation owner in this. I played a lyncher in this. And I was a rapist in this. And she just says, so you just figured out what it is you're good at.
Like, all right.
And he's just, you know, it's this friendly conversation. But it was very funny just because he's like, I've played all these horrible people.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And it's a great scene. I get a kick out of that. Another scene I liked a lot, because throughout the filming of the movie, we see that Derville's not really, his heart isn't in it. Like, he's just kind of getting drunk.
He's just there. And
yeah, and he's like,
let's get through this thing.
Yeah, he really doesn't believe in it at all. And at one point, he kind of badmouths the movie in front of the cast and crew. And then, like, Rudy, you know, drags him aside and is like, hey, man, don't do shit like that. I'm doing all this stuff and I don't have an ego about it. I'm like, using my money. Like,
if we need sandwiches, I will go make sandwiches for the crew. Yeah. And
It's like, oh, we're all trying to do a thing here.
You got
to
pull together. And,
And I like that scene quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's Eddie Murphy's acting chops. It's like, damn, right there.
Yeah. Eddie did a really nice job in this. We haven't mentioned about his performance too much, but it's a great performance. I don't have too much more to say about it besides that, but he was great.
Yeah, it was very good. And well, there's a few other things here too. Like I looked it up and like I saw like a few of the scenes that they were filming in this movie.
Yeah,
they weren't actually in the movie Dolomite.
They mixed it up a little bit. Yeah. Some of the things from like some of his future movies. I've got. Give me a minute, and I'll find it on the IMDb trivia.
One thing I saw was the sex scene, the big sex scene they had.
Yeah,
where you know he's having sex with a woman so hard that like the ceiling comes down and the pictures on the
He is loving her so hard that the house is a shaking,
making sexy time.
Right.
That's actually in a movie called The Human Tornado, which is like the second movie.
Right. That was from 1976, so I think that was the second movie.
Right.
It's the police car chase that we see him shooting, Dolomite fleeing the house, the bitch are you for real scene, the exploding car, and the sex scene. Those are all from The Human Tornado.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I looked it up, and I think the writers said they did that. They added in all these other scenes from other movies because they thought their thinking was, well, this will probably be the only Rudy Ray Moore movie that's ever made.
Right.
So maybe we should just put in all his greatest hits in this movie.
Yeah. And it also says, Moore repeatedly saying, put your weight on it, and the main character in the play... vowing to take revenge against a drug dealer are references to Disco Godfather, which was in 1979.
Yeah, so they kind of played.
So it's a mashup.
Yeah, they kind of played with the timeline a little bit here and there. Just make all of this. Just put all his best of and greatest hits.
And
in
that's
one thing.
That's not uncommon. I know, like they did a little of that in the Andy Kaufman movie Man on the Moon too.
Oh.
Like they moved his show at Carnegie Hall. He did that sometime in the 70s, and they moved that to like around 1980 after Andy had gotten his terminal diagnosis.
Oh.
And they made it like this sort of triumphant thing. So like, you know, you do what you, because real life, it doesn't have a three-act structure.
Right.
So you have to kind of construct one, because in real life, people's lives have ups and downs and all that stuff. And so it might not always make a great story.
Right. I actually read that, and also another thing I saw is in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, the one with Queen, like it has Freddie Mercury, Rami Malek, telling his bandmates that he has, you know, he has AIDS before they go do the big concert.
The Live Aid show.
Yeah, but I think in real life, he didn't do that. I think
either
he didn't know or he didn't tell his bandmates like that, but I guess they just did that to make
it work. I think they also had him like calling his father, or he had some issue with his parents or something like that.
And they played up a lot of stuff for drama, like a lot of Queen aficionados.
And that's a thing that biopics do a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
you just do it to make the best movie. And sometimes you gotta play with the truth a little bit.
A little bit.
Still, titties and kung fu.
Yeah, you still get titties and kung fu, people. There you go.
I mean, so why are you complaining? Really?
They bend the truth, but you get boobs and hi-yahs.
Yeah, exactly. He's fighting off guys. He's throwing them in trunks.
Yeah. Blowing up cars. Yeah, it's a tit for tat.
And then Mike Epps is like, no,
that's my
cousin's car. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, I'm sure they didn't blow up the car with this guy having no idea. I mean, I've never made a movie on that scale. And like, you know, they're doing things like, oh, they're surprised by things while the film is rolling. Like when they're shooting the sex scene, like they're surprised by the ceiling coming down. And it's like, well, how do you not see people preparing that?
I was thinking that. I mean, yeah.
But it makes for a funny scene, so.
Yeah, you're going to have to suspend disbelief. Because I'd figure, like, if I was lending somebody my car, my eyes would be on it the whole time.
Right. I would watch for people strapping explosives to my car. And
it's like, hey, why are they dousing my cousin's car in gasoline like that?
Why do you need a detonator for this scene? what is that C4 there for?
These are fireworks.
Yeah. Why are you putting that oily rag in the tailpipe and setting it on fire?
No reason. Hey, can I talk to you over here for a minute?
You want to watch for that stuff, is just what I'm saying.
Exactly. All right, so the filming's going along. They're getting by. Of course, that there hits a point where they run out of film, and they're not done. So.
Literally, while they're shooting a scene.
Exactly.
And
there's no more film. So, of course, Rudy has to go back to the label, ask for more money, saying,
yeah.
And then the label's like, well, you didn't account for this. You didn't account for editing and post and all the stuff you got to do. And it was like, no, I didn't.
Because, again, he doesn't really know what he's doing.
He does not know. We can't emphasize enough. He does not know what he's doing.
No.
So the label's like, all right, we'll give you the money, but we'll pretty much own your...
We'll own your albums outright.
Yeah.
Like, all the profits will go to us.
Yeah, and he's like, well, you know, I'm going to bet on me. I feel like, you know, people want to see this movie, so I'm going to do this movie.
God bless you, Rudy Ray Moore.
Yeah, I know. So then keeps filming it. Then they show the crazy scene with all the kung fu women, karate women, you know, titties and kung fu.
Everyone is kung fu fighting. That's right. The song come to life.
As advertised.
Yeah. Those cats, they were, in fact, fast as lightning.
It was a little bit frightening.
It was expert fighting. Expert timing.
Ah!
Expert timing. That's it.
Yeah.
Blanking on my lyrics
Oh, I love that song. God damn
it. That is.
All right, but so anyway, they filmed the final scene. Of course, the last scene is where Rudy fights Dervil, who's the big bad guy, Willie Green, in the film. And I guess at one point, he's actually literally like ripping out his guts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I was like, all right, maybe I do need to see Dolomite.
Yeah, maybe.
There's a scene where he's literally ripping out a man's guts.
I haven't watched a movie where one man rips out another man's guts since I saw Machete. So
I
feel like I'm due.
And he ripped out the guts and he like kind of swung on it.
He like rappelled down a building.
Oh, yeah.
He, like, yeah. Go see Machete, guys.
Yeah, that was insane.
That is a cool... because they were making that sort of in the style of, like, you know, the 70s Grindhouse.
It's Machete-esque.
Yeah, it spun out of Grindhouse, I think. So.
Exactly. So that was the final scene.
Mm-hmm.
Dervil leaves, kind of disparages the film's like, yeah, I'll see you, losers.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, see you, fuckers.
Yeah, this ain't never coming out.
He's like, I'll see you all at the rap party. And then he leaves. He comes back in. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to the rap party. And that's the last we see of Wesley Snipes in this movie.
Classic Dervil.
Which is kind of hilarious.
Snipes, I know. Snipes really steals some scenes in this movie.
He's funny. He doesn't have the biggest part, but he makes the most out of what he has.
He chews up that scenery like it's like covered in cheese.
And I haven't seen Wesley Snipes in a movie in forever.
It's been a minute. He's in and out. Well, because
he went away for a while.
Oh, did he?
He had some tax things.
Ooh.
Did you not hear about this?
I did not.
Yeah.
What tax? I mean, just out of curiosity, what?
Wesley Snipes, he's had some troubles.
All right. So if you, you have, taxes, you have to, pay them?
This is what I hear, yes. This is my understanding.
I have to make some calls.
Yeah. you remember that movie U.S. Marshals that he did where he's being chased by?
Yes,
I believe that was based in fact.
Oh,
that was sort of like a prequel to his future troubles with the law.
That was a biopic.
That was like a biopic, but they made it like years in advance before.
How did they know?
I don't know. Wow. I don't know. But
life imitates art.
And by the way, if you're interested in Wesley Snipes, go find the interview that Patton Oswalt did with the AV Club where he talks about shooting Blade 3 with Wesley Snipes. He has some incredibly insane stories.
Oh, yo! Is that the one where he went, he was really upset with the director and then they had some weird thing?
Well, apparently most of... as much could be done by Wesley Snipes' stand-in was done by Wesley Snipes' stand-in in that movie. And Wesley Snipes would just, allegedly stay in his trailer, smoke weed, and just send... post-it notes to people with notes signed from Blade because he was very method.
Tight.
Because apparently Blade spends all day in his trailer smoking weed.
Of course.
And
more Blade, more like Blaze. Am I right, guys? Am I right? Oh, hey, guys, thank you so much. You can come find me at Darren Credible on Twitter and Instagram.
He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. I mean, come on. He came up with that Blaze joke off the cuff.
That was off the rip.
Off the rip.
What? Come on. I mean.
Anyway.
Wow. I impressed myself.
Anyway, go read Patton Oswalt's stories about Wesley Snipes. You will not regret it.
Woo. All right. So where the hell were we?
The movie is made. The movie is wrapped.
Right.
And now he's trying to find a distributor, and it's that scene I was talking about before where he's still squatting in the hotel and he's like calling distributors in one of the phone booths and he's got a list and nobody is interested in the movie.
Right.
And then we have a scene where he's talking to a DJ.
Oh, well, before that, okay. Slightly before that.
Yeah.
Because now he's in so much debt, he has to go back and do more stand up and make more money and do. Got to bring in the money anyway.
He's that cheddar.
Yeah, but he's kind of half hearted about it now just because the movie is done.
Yeah.
He really wants it to come out. No one wants it. So he's making as much money as he can on the road, but now he's worse off because now all the money goes straight to the label. So he's just he's basically working for free.
He's kind of lost his spirit at this point. He's despairing. He's, it's. And we have a scene where he's being interviewed by a DJ
in Indianapolis. DJ Bobby Vail, played by SNL alum Chris Rock.
Chris Rock.
Hey.
And Chris Rock, who's like, hey, it's great to see you. I hear you made a Dolomite movie. When is that coming out? When can we see that? And Rudy is just like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know when it's coming out. I can't tell you when that's coming out.
And he's like, all right, let's go to a commercial.
And then when they go to the commercial, they go to the commercial break, and then Chris Rock's like, what the hell are you doing to me, man?
Yeah.
I'm trying to support you. You can't even answer my damn questions.
Yeah, and then he's like, well, look, I wish I could tell you, but nobody wants it. So I have it, it's done, but no one, so I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know when the movie's coming out, but he doesn't want to say that on air. He doesn't want to admit that
he's the one to admit defeat.
He's a failure or whatever. Yeah. And then Chris Rock is like, okay, look, Mike, was it his cousin?
His cousin.
His cousin, he's got a theater. He's We can set something up there. So he sets up this showing of Dolomite, and now it's the world premiere of Dolomite in the theater.
Right, right. Because he went to the cousin about the theater, and he's like, "Yeah, if you want, you pay me $500. You can show your movie here. We have you can show it at midnight on a Friday."
Right. He's like, "I don't have a midnight movie going on Friday," and he's like, "How does $500 sound?" And Rudy thinks, "Oh, he's going to pay me $500 to show the movie. This is great. That sounds pretty good." And then he's like. And then the theater owner's like, no, you give me $500, and then you will get the ticket price.
You'll get all the door.
Yeah, basically.
All the box office. And he's like, what about the popcorn and stuff?
And he's like, no, that comes to me.
So, and he's like, we did it for Grizzly Adams and Billy Jack.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, if you promote it right and really hustle, you can make a lot of money.
Right.
So
he takes the deal. Yeah. He takes the deal. And then he goes out there. He hustles. We see him out there. He's passing out flyers.
Yeah.
He's driving through the town with a megaphone out his car.
Yeah, like a Blues Brothers style.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the triumphant return of the Blues Brothers. And
yeah, he's out there shaking hands, kissing babies, passing out flyers to and fro. And midnight on Friday comes and he's like, "I hope this works."
And this is like the point in the movie where we see him struggling a bit more. He's sweating to get it done. You know?
Exactly. It's pretty much him. Like he doesn't have his crew around because I guess he's in Indianapolis and everybody else.
That's true.
Everybody else is back in L.A.
Right. Right.
And hope against all hope. It happened. People start showing up and
the screening's a hit
in droves.
Yeah. And because he's got that cult following and because he hustled and he got the people out there.
Yeah. And sure enough. Like it makes a big splash and it gets in a Variety, I believe, and the people at Dimension Films,
right.
Especially the head of Dimension Films, Lawrence Wallner, played by SNL writer Bob Odenkirk, takes notice.
I had no idea Bob Odenkirk was going to be. Uh-huh. In the movie. I was like, "Hey, Bobby Odenkirk,
Bobby O,
Better Call Saul,
Bob and Dave,
Bob and Dave,
isn't that the show?" Mr. Show, goddamn it! What with Bob and Dave?
With Bob and Dave.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah,
you look at me like I'm crazy.
I always look at you like that, though.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
But
you're crazy.
Crazy. I'm so crazy.
But yeah, so they get this distribution deal, and it's going to be like nationally distributed, right?
Right. Yeah. So like when Bob Odenkirk, Lawrence Wallner sees that, oh wow, what's this film that's doing this well at a one theater in Indianapolis.
Right.
He calls up Dolomite, and Dolomite comes in with his people, his squad.
He comes in character. They're all decked out to the nines, and all the others are like, "Rudy, what do we say?" And he's like, "You don't say anything."
Yeah.
And you just be there. He's like putting on a show for these guys.
Like,
make him think he's a bigger deal than he is.
Exactly. So... And of course, they bring up the fact that, hey, aren't you the same guys that turned me down a while ago?
Right.
But now that you see the movie something, now you want to be something.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, showbiz.
That's the game.
Showbiz funny like that.
That's the game. Yeah.
And sure enough, it's like that now.
You got some heat. We want to be a part of that.
Oh, you got Twitter followers? Hey, come aboard.
Exactly. Exactly.
And and they were like, and they basically were saying, yeah, look, we got all these. We could put your movie in all these theaters, and yeah, we turned you down back then, but we see you're doing stuff now. So then, to be honest, if you just do this by yourself, you're going to go, you got to go from city to city to city to make some money. We can help you with that right now. So what do you say?
Yeah.
And he was like, all right, let's do it.
And he's being totally upfront. He's being totally honest. He's this is it. This is how the game is played.
This is the game.
Yeah. So.
And and then sure enough, Dolomite is playing in theaters, and towards the end, one of the final scenes, they're off going to the L.A. premiere.
Right.
They're reading reviews.
They're reading reviews, and they read, and the reviews are not good. The reviews are pretty savage.
Less than positive.
The first one they read is he says, "Dolomite might be a better name."
That's good. That's like
that's a good line, right?
It's not Blaze good, but it's good.
No, it's not Blaze good. I mean, it's. But they are not. They think of Dolomite like what Rudy thought of the front page earlier in the movie.
Yes,
they are that down. They are not down with the kung fu and the titties.
Yeah, which is I thought that was universal. Like, who doesn't love kung fu and titties?
I don't know. Horrible people. Horrible people dislike kung fu and titties.
Communists.
Yeah. And when titties do kung fu, I mean, come on.
I mean, my God.
That's the dream.
Kung fu titties. That's all.
Kung fu titties. That's going to be the name of our movie.
Damn straight.
When we make this movie, you know, with about Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon, it's going to be called Kung Fu Titties.
Get ready for it, America. Yeah. I mean.
Kung Fu Titties, the Matthau-Lemmon story. The Lemmon-Matthau story. I don't know which one got top billing typically, but we'll work that out.
Streaming on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. So get ready, people. Oh, boy. Apologies to the Matthau and Lemmon estate.
Yeah. Yeah. And apologies to titties out there.
No. Yeah. Sorry, titties.
Yeah.
But yeah, so all the reviews aren't great.
Do a little.
Oh, thank you.
A little that, yeah.
Thank you. All the reviews aren't great that they read, except there's one review where they say the reviewer is saying the movie is coarse, rude, crude, and vulgar.
Right.
And Rudy's more positive about that because it's like, oh, that's the great review. Because people are going to want to see what's so coarse, rude, and
they want to see what the deal is. I mean, like, I got excited when at the beginning of this movie it said it had pervasive language, crude sexual content, and graphic nudity. I got excited to watch this movie. Because I was like, am I going to see some kung fu and titties? I think so.
There you go.
So,
Rudy knows what the people like.
He knows, yeah. He's got his finger on the pulse of what the people want.
Kung fu and titties.
Kung fu and titties. Kung fu.
Oh, boy. This is problematic as hell. So,
Yeah.
All right. So, they get to the theater. They're kind of a little worried about what's going to happen.
They're like, are people going to come out? We don't know. I mean, the reviews are horrible. Is anybody going to come out? And they get to the theater, and it's a mob.
Everybody comes out.
It is a mob scene, man.
A mob.
Ah! Everybody and his brother is out there to see Dolemite.
Yeah.
Fuck up some motherfuckers.
Yeah, whoa.
Yeah.
Easy there, salty mouth.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's... No. But yeah, it's a huge scene. Like everybody came out. It's fantastic.
And, yeah, you know. They get there to the theater and they're like, you know, we're doing a 10 o'clock showing, we're doing a midnight showing, we're gonna have to do a 2 a.m. showing,
right,
to accommodate all these people who are lined up to see the movie, and they come in, they get out of their cars, and there's a mob of people, and there's this young kid there who goes up to Rudy, and he's like, I'm your number one fan, man, I love you. And then they go into the movie, and people are like, hey, we got you some seats down front, you know, to watch the movie. And then Rudy's like, he goes back, and he's like, no, you know what, I'm going to stay out here. These people are going to be waiting out here until 2 a.m. to see this movie.
Right.
I'm going to stay here with them. I've seen the movie. I don't need to be in there. Yeah. I'm going to be out here with my people.
I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
I lived it.
Yes.
For those that don't know, that was from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Co-written by Phil Hartman.
Ooh, did he?
Yeah. I believe he co-wrote the movie. He co-created the Pee-wee Herman character. I think he wrote the first movie.
Maybe we could talk about Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Maybe we could.
Ooh.
We'll have to research that.
Because that movie is... Yeah. That left a mark on me.
That did? Okay. All right.
It was the worst accident I've ever seen.
All right. Well, no time to get into that.
I'm sorry.
We're in the home stretch.
Dolemite
is out there with his people. He goes back and he talks to that kid and he gives him his cane.
Yeah.
And
look at him. Yeah.
And they're doing like a...
They're rhyming back and forth.
It's almost like a rap battle. They're going back and forth and yeah.
And that's how it ends. Like him up, which I believe he actually did in real life. Like he knew people were going to be up there till 2 in the a.m. So he's like, let me talk to the people and perform.
And again, it kind of reminded me of Ed Wood, where the film Ed Wood ends with the big premiere of Plan 9 from Outer Space, and Ed Wood is like, this is it. This is the one they'll remember me for. and it ends on that moment of triumph.
Yay.
For him, and which is what you want to see.
Yeah. People love seeing the underdog succeed.
Exactly.
It's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. But this was fun. I mean, Eddie Murphy was great.
Yeah. I mean, the movie was dedicated to his brother, Charlie Murphy, which was very sweet.
Rest in peace, Charlie.
R.I.P. And Eddie Murphy.
Charlie Murphy, who you probably remember from Chappelle's Show.
Charlie Murphy!
Darkness!
Whoa!
Darkness, Charlie Murphy.
What, dude, offensive.
Okay.
Whoa! Dude, I was fine with...
From the sketch.
I was fine with Kung Fu Titties, but I mean...
I apologize. I apologize.
No, it's all right. But yeah.
Well, now I feel bad.
No, don't feel bad. It was fine. I was just fucking with you.
Okay.
I really was. But yeah, so I mean, everybody's saying this film is like Eddie Murphy's big comeback film, and
this is about his third comeback.
Yeah,
because he had a comeback with Nutty Professor.
Right.
He had a comeback with Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
And he's had a comeback. This is like at least his third, right?
Yeah, I guess he's, so.
Eddie Murphy, his career, it's just like the. If you diagram his career, it looks like an EKG monitor, you know?
Yeah.
Going up and down. And
that medical talk?
What, EKG yeah. Monitor? I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
You know, but, the thing with a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, it's peaks and valleys. It's all wavy gravy. But yeah, I think, I don't know. We'll see where he goes from here. But I mean, I don't know. I love this film. Strong performances all around. Snipes, Epps, Robinson, Burgess. It is all good stuff. This is a great film. Like, and I also saw like a few other things. Like after, like if you look at some like YouTube videos that had like that roundtable discussion about the film. And it had,
I didn't see that.
They actually had like one pretty cool thing that I didn't know. But Snipes talked about how he actually auditioned to be in the original Coming to America.
Oh wow!
He auditioned for the part Eric LaSalle got.
Oh, and the Soul Glow.
The Soul Glow, yeah, it was going to be him, but I think they said that he didn't get it because I think he looked too African, and I think one of somebody looked more African American. I think that's what he said.
Oh, would that be like mean he was too dark skinned?
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying. That's what they're alluding to anyway.
Right.
And then, but sure enough, he's going to be in the sequel coming to.
Oh, that's cool.
Coming
that's cool.
to America.
Yeah, because this movie, I read this was the first time that Wesley Snipes and Eddie Murphy worked together. But Eddie was a huge fan of Wesley Snipes, and this is the first time. So that's cool. It must have been a good working experience. And,
yeah, I mean, they definitely knew about each other. They were like in the same circles.
Yeah. I'm sure they knew each other socially or whatever. And it says here, both Wesley Snipes and Eddie Murphy have appeared in a Michael Jackson music video. Wesley, he's one of the guys in Bad.
He is?
Yeah, he is.
I haven't seen Bad in a while.
Oh, you gotta watch Bad. Wesley Snipes is right in there, right. Man.
You ain't bad. You ain't nothing.
That's right.
You ain't nothing.
Yeah. Eddie appeared in Michael Jackson,
Remember the Time, the Egyptian.
I don't really remember that one
too well. You didn't remember that one? It was a big deal because it came on like prime time.
Right.
On Channel 5, like right after In Living Color. It was a big deal. It had like...
I was not paying as much attention to Michael Jackson by 92. Like Bad, I remember. I remember the premiere of Bad because that was like a short film, I think directed by John Landis, if I remember correctly.
Right. But Remember the Time was a good song. It had Eddie Murphy was in it. I think it was Iman, the model, and Magic Johnson was in it too. But it was like this whole thing where they were like... He was like an Egyptian pharaoh and Iman was the queen and... Michael Jackson was like performing, you know, do you remember when we fell in love?
Okay.
It was a good little ditty.
All right. Well, I will check out Remember the Time if you check out Bad again.
I will check out Bad.
Yeah. But then, of course, you have to watch the Weird Al version, Fat.
Of course. I mean, that's...
Shot on the same set.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Weird Al, he does not half-ass this stuff.
No, he does not. He didn't skimp.
He whole-asses it.
But yeah, I mean, I really like this film. I mean, I guess as a creative, I really like the kind of go-getter hustle part of it too.
Because
I mean, I think that part kind of hits all of us creatives, you know, in the heart, in the feels. Because like I did notice when that movie came out, like a lot of fellow comedians and performers I know also said that they liked how. That whole, you know, if no one gives you a chance, you make your own chance and like sort of create your own lane and kind of that, you know, stick-to-itiveness. They really identified like what we're doing now with this podcast.
If your stand-up career isn't going anywhere after like 8 or 9 years, you're like, let's start a podcast.
That's right.
And get some more.
Shout out to KP Burke.
Yeah.
Whoa! I'm joking! That was a joke.
Whoa. I mean, he's not going to hear this, but whoa.
Yeah.
Guys,
no one tell KP Burke about what I said. I kid.
KP is a friend of ours.
I kid. What?
But I did like how at the very end of the movie, like they did that thing that you see in a lot of biopics where they give you a little text and it's like, oh, this is what happened to this person. And the last thing we see is just Rudy continued fucking up motherfuckers until the day he died.
Yeah. And, I mean, he passed away unfortunately in 2008 at the age of 81. So he lived. Yeah. He lived a good long life.
But that is a great legacy to have. I mean, I want that. I want, that's what I want to be said about me when I go.
You want that written in your tombstone?
Yeah. John Trumbull continued fucking like your motherfuckers until the day he died. I don't think they're going to say that, but I think that would be cool if they did say that.
I'd be very surprised if they said that.
At my funeral, if you give the eulogy, you say that.
At your funeral, I will dress up as Dolomite in an Afro wig with an army of Kung Fu titties by my side.
This is all I want. This is all I want. Then I will feel like I've had a life well lived.
John Trumbull! Fuck it up, motherfuckers, till the day he died.
Just for the confused looks alone.
Yeah, people are like, the hell is this? What? Is this what John wanted?
It is. It is. I am saying this for the record right now. This is what I want my funeral to be.
This is legally binding. So
you can play this right before or right after.
Oh, I will. Don't think I won't. I will. And the fact that he like sort of created something for himself at, you know, in his late 40s, which, you know, a lot of people say, like, you know, if you haven't made it by the time you're in your 40s, it ain't going to happen. But he was like, he had a dream. And also another thing that that's what people say, but they don't mean us. We're going to make it.
Right.
We're going to be the exception. We're going to be the Rodney Dangerfield of this.
Right.
We are.
We're going to be like the Grandma Moses of.
Yeah. Is that a comic?
No. She was a painter, didn't start painting until like her 80s or something.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense. I was going to say Phyllis Diller, because she started later in life too, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Or Lewis Black. He started late. I think he didn't start doing comics until like 40 or something. So there you go. See? We still got time, baby.
There's still hope.
We still got time, baby.
There's still hope.
There you go. See?
There's still hope.
But yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people say that, like, you know, you're not going to make it at a certain age, but he, throughout, against all odds, he made something. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't like a mainstream guy, but he had like a strong underground following.
But even that's a cult guy is an amazing accomplishment. I mean, having a cult following, I mean, that's something. That's not nothing.
Yeah, I mean, John Waters, he has a cult following. He made it. The dude that did that movie, The Room, Tommy Wiseau. He's a weirdo. Made a weird movie.
Yep.
That got him somewhere. So there you
go.
It
did. Yeah.
Did you ever see The Room?
I have not seen The Room, I have not seen the movie they made about The Room.
Oh, The Disaster Artist.
I've only seen like little clips of The Room.
Someday
I'll sit down and watch it.
It's like a MST3K film. It's like it's like really bad acting, really bad dialogue, but it's not. But they're playing it straight. It's not meant to be bad, which makes it funny.
Well, nobody sets out to make a bad movie. I mean.
We'll see. But you know, Kung Fu Titties comes out. We'll see.
That's going to be a great movie. That's going to win all the Oscars.
I don't mean to disparage Kung Fu Titties. I apologize. I don't want to Dervil Martin this.
Yeah. Don't be a Dervil.
Yeah, that movie's going to take us to the top.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that we forgot to talk about this in the movie, but they also talk about like his driving force as to why he wants to make it so badly. Mm-hmm. Like apparently he had issues with his dad growing up. He didn't have a very happy childhood, and there's like actually one very dramatic scene where he's talking to a picture of his dad, and he talks about how he left home when he was 15, and his dad was very abusive. But then I don't think he was his dad, because at one point he's like, "Yeah, he wasn't my dad anyway. He's just some dude just beat on me."
Right.
And like there's a very kind of powerful scene where he's like kind of, you know, screaming at the picture, like, "You thought I wasn't gonna be shit, but you're the one that ain't shit. I'm Dolomite, motherfucker." Like you can tell he has like a lot of, you know,
pent up rage
and like just a lot of anger in him, and just, you know,
so why he wants to fuck up the motherfuckers.
Yeah. And that's where it all comes from, people.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's the film. I dug
good,
it.
Good film. Worth seeing.
Darn too.
It's on Netflix. It's so easy to see.
Yeah.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. What else you got to do?
Yeah.
You bum.
What else do you have going on in your life?
You crumb.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Sitting here, you're listening to this podcast for like an hour.
You crumb bum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do something with your life. Watch a Netflix movie.
Get your shit together. God. Seriously.
I am tired.
What the hell are you doing with your life?
We are so tired of carrying you. You make us sick.
Your mother and I have tried and tried and tried. And we are at the end of our ropes with you. Seriously. Seriously.
Get it together.
Get your shit together. Go out there and just fuck up some motherfuckers. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. You're like a motivational speaker.
That's I
you're the new Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
All right, so so that's the show, and guys, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. We are going to be back next week. SNL is back with an all-new episode. We're going to have Jennifer Lopez hosting, yes, and DaBaby as the musical guest.
J-Lo and DaBaby.
So that's something to look forward to. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be all right. Not too shabby.
I don't know if we're going to have any titties and kung fu, but, you know, who knows? Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So join us, won't you? And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Darin Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible. Oh, and actually, if you're in Howell, New Jersey, December 13th, Friday the 13th, I'll be performing at the Grange Playhouse.
Wow.
So, come on down.
All right. Are you going to, like, go through town with a megaphone out your car and just hustle and get some more people there?
Yes.
That's what you need to do. So we got to learn from Ladies Rudy
and gentlemen. Darin Patterson, one time only at the Grange Playhouse.
Grand return.
Grand return.
And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L. And please follow the show's page at SNL Nerds Show and tweet at us. And we're there. We will respond.
Yes, we are very...
Either on Twitter or here on the show, or maybe even both. Who knows? Yeah. You may get lucky. And follow the show. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends. That really does help. That helps boost us up. And that's it. And until then,
nerds out.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.